Having had a spiritual... Yes, are you asking or stretching?
Oh, sorry.
No, fine, fine. That was good what she was doing. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. It's a very rich step. I think in the 12 and 12, it takes up more room than anything else. And even in the big book, it's some of the other steps that go boom, boom, boom. And there's so much on step 12. So I've decided to divide this into two sittings so that we could sort of digest some of the nourishment in a different way. And we'll take a look at spiritual awakening, which can mean many, many different things. And we'll look at it from the perspective of the steps, of course, and also from a Buddhist perspective. And then we'll do the rest next month, practicing in all our affairs. However, you don't have to wait till next month to practice what you've gotten from the program in all your affairs. It's not a one-shot deal, that's for sure. So, the 12 steps, they're very amazing, actually. They actually evoke and echo the spiritual wisdom of the ages, and very much similar to the basic foundations of the Buddhist teachings. If we can awaken, if we can be present, if we can see clearly reality as it is, not the way we want it, that's the key. We want life to unfold the way we want it, as we want it, when we want it. And that creates an awful lot of suffering. And it's the Buddhist practice, and it's the same thing in the 12 steps. The universe is going to do its own thing. And how do we, like what he was doing, how do we adjust to it? How do we put our arms around it, right? And somebody wrote, we learn to trust the universe, eliminate running after desire, yeah? And with it, our neurotic compulsion to satisfy our cravings, which leads us to the abyss of addiction. And I'm very fond of getting closer to words, the abyss of addiction. I don't know what it was like for you, but before I came into program, I was at the abyss. I was falling over into it. And it was a long way downhill. And I had no idea I could get lifted back up. I just like that phrase, the abyss of addiction. So what's a spiritual awakening? There's no one right answer, by the way. After his enlightenment, the Buddha met some people, and he must have had a sense of calm on his face. And people stopped him, and they said, are you just a man? He said, no. And they said, well, are you a god? No. Then what are you? What are you? There was some glow. And it is said that he said, I'm awake. I'm awake. And then he became known as the Buddha, which means the awakened one. You know, the awakened one. So we know the difference between, you know, when you get up in the morning, the alarm goes off, you're not really awake. And when you're awake and you're up and you're getting around, it's that kind of difference in our heart and our body, our minds, the difference between being asleep. And most of us are sleepwalking most of the time. So many things just go on automatic. We can listen to people on automatic. We can do so many of the things we do on automatic. That's not being awake. Being fully, fully present. And have you noticed that whenever it is that you're present, life is so much richer? Like if you're talking to somebody, your sponsee, your sponsor, a friend, and you're listening to the other person and you hear them, something is very different, isn't it, than when you just, you're sort of there, but not. You could probably repeat back most of it, but not really get it. So we want to learn to be awake. And that's part of what this is talking about. So I'll just read you the Buddha's exclamation at the point of his awakening. Theoretically, it says, he said this, "Wonder of wonders! This very enlightenment is the nature of all beings, and yet they are unhappy for lack of it." So we have it within us, just like we all had it within us to be sober and abstinent. But at some point, maybe before we came into program, it felt miles away, didn't it? It felt like that's a whole other world. That's a whole other world. Well, that was the beginning of waking up. That was the beginning of waking up. So what did he see and what did he understand? What did the Buddha see and understand? And what did Bill W. and those who follow, what did they come to understand? So often people think of awakening as some mystical experience. Oh, I had a spiritual awakening. I saw clouds and colors. And they're nice, by the way. Colors are nice. But that's not exactly what it is. This is what Lama Suryadas said. Is he like a Jewish guy from Brooklyn? I think he's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Tibetan teacher. He wrote, "Enlightenment is not, I love this, enlightenment is not about becoming divine. It's about becoming more fully human." And there's so much here in being human. And the Buddha's awakening was the realization of what reality is, how things are, how they come to be, how they pass, how they work, basically the end of ignorance. And in his quote-unquote enlightenment or awakening, he had a willingness to see it as it is. I tend to see things sort of through my prism, which is a prison in a way, not seeing the whole thing. I remember the first time I went to an AA meeting, it was kind of weird. I thought, all these drunks, what the hell am I doing here, you know? And all of a sudden, something opened. Did you have that? Like, oh, there's a way. I don't know that I can do it, but there is a way. Something opened, and so much of life is right out there, and we don't see it. Step 12 can help us with that. So awakening, it's a key word. To be alert, to be aware. And when we're awake and when we're attuned, we will see that things are changing constantly. Things are shifting constantly. Nothing stays the same. It may look the same, but just for a moment, check in with your body. While we're sitting here and you're quiet and it all looks like we're just sitting and listening, there's a factory going on inside. It's unbelievable, actually. It's not staying, quiet. It's just moving, moving. And the same thing out there. Everything is shifting and changing. And we get caught. We get caught. Because what do? This is no surprise. We keep trying to grab on what we think is going to make us happy, grabbing on to pleasure and pushing away what's painful. Well, I don't like that. I don't want that. How many relationships break up because there's an argument? How many, in the beginning, oh my God, he's wonderful, she's marvelous. We're soulmates. That's for that first half hour. But can we stay with, there is this something that's going, moving continuously. And part of this is learning to live with discomfort. Because it's part of life. It just is. And I'm not sitting here saying life is bad, you got to learn to live with it. No. Life is also marvelous, but you got to learn to let it go when it's time to move on. So with some form of awakening, with practice, we learn to flow. We learn to flow with the impermanent instead of imposing how it should be. When I think about what I was like, when I first came into program. I am very glad that there was impermanence. I'm very glad. And sometimes when things are really uncomfortable, I also know that somewhere along the line, something is going to shift. Maybe it'll be my attitude towards it, you know? But something will shift. So spiritual awakening is this kind of a complex, interwoven process. What is spiritual? Spiritual doesn't necessarily have anything to do with religion. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with God. It's like a maturing of understanding. It's like a seeing beyond the narrow of just what's here. It's an allowing of unfolding. It's an allowing of unfolding, an allowing of the mystery. It's an allowing, if your train is late, that you're somehow able to be there and know that you will get to work when you get to work. There's kind of a something in the heart that knows, even with the discomfort of the immediate present. And we get out of being this, being locked into this small claustrophobic sense of self. You know, sometimes when you go on a date, like a first date, or when you first meet somebody, and you know, you have this wonderful, invigorating conversation because you want to find out everything about the person. But it's amazing how you think you know that person after 15, 20 minutes of talking. You have information, so you think you know the person. We have information about ourselves. We have CVs, one way or another, but that's not who we are. It's part of what has happened in this play on life, but we get caught in seeing through a very, very small way. So a spiritual awakening is all about willing to open up. To open up in very many different ways. And in that opening, a sense of freedom can come. And little by little, a sense of trust. Have you had that where you can, you don't have to necessarily have everything. You can trust that somehow you'll get to the end of the day, even if it's not working exactly the way you want. As I stayed sober, a trust deepened in me. I am not the only one. That even if something was difficult, I could stay sober. There was a trust that there was another answer, even if I didn't know the answers. And I kind of like that, that I don't have to know the answers to trust that there's an answer. Sometimes I need an answer. But for the most part. So with a spiritual awakening, we start to know what we see. We start to know what we see rather than just see what we know. I still would love to go to countries of where I didn't know the rules. I didn't know the culture. Because it kept banging on me. I had to open to different ways. Yeah, there's more than just my way of seeing things. And in a way, a spiritual awakening connects the head to the heart to experience. Too much is in the head of how we think it should be, or we can just forget the head and just come from the heart, which is beautiful but not always safe, not always helpful. But to be bringing all of that into our experience, a spiritual awakening. So this path, as you all know, is not linear. You know, it's not like, okay, all right, I'm at step 12, I guess I'm done now. Right? Because I forgot about practice, the principles, and all our affairs. But it's continuous. And we can see it through the lens of three different aspects. both from the 12 steps and from the Buddhist teachings. So the first one is surrender, right? Surrender. This admission of powerless is really the basis for spiritual awakening. So being willing to not, I can't make it all go the way I want it to go. And that's obviously not just in the first step, but in life. And when we do that, we start to have, we open to a sense, oh, there's something more than just me and what I can control. And life takes on this other dimension. Recovery takes on this other dimension. We also see that we find, okay, we have a capacity to move into sobriety or abstinence. But we also, from the Buddhist perspective, see that we have a capacity for Buddha nature, this loving, open place that can just be with what's there and see it for what it is. It's not always easy. I mean, it takes a lot of development. It takes, you know, it takes work. But it's possible. It's possible. The days when I have the best day, time, fun, connection, is when I forget that I'm a Sandra Weinberg. And I put it that way, it's like a Sandra Weinberg. You know, a Sandra Weinberg has a this, a this, a this, a this, a this. But if it's like, oh, I'm this person, I got some stuff going on in me, and you know, but I'm more open and available. Not to be trapped in my idea of who I am. So check that one out, you know, over the week. Not to be trapped in the idea of who you are, or the idea of who your mate is, or your friends are, or give them some space. Give it more space. Right. Adya Shanti, who's one of my teachers, is just a wonderful man, in a very pithy reply to an interview with a student, he said this: hold on, deny what is and suffer. Let go, let be what is and be happy. Go against life, hurts. Go with life, happy. And it's not always going in the direction we want, but can we still go with it? So, surrender, and responsibility is built into spiritual awakening. Responsibility is built into the 12th step. And responsibility covers the inventory and the amends. Those are very, very important. In the Buddhist view, it could be called cleaning up our karma. You know, becoming willing to look at our shadow sides, becoming willing to look at how cause and effect works in our lives. That some of the stuff that's happening in our lives isn't just happening because something out there decided. It has something to do with us most of the time, or much of the time. And we do this, and we find ourselves living a more ethical life. It's all built into the steps, and it's certainly built into the Buddha's teaching. Living an ethical life is a main teaching of the Buddha. And he talked about the Eightfold Path to Freedom. So there's surrender, there's responsibility, and there's fulfillment. Fulfillment. It's not about graduating, but an ongoing commitment to growth and wisdom. It doesn't end. The 11th and 12th steps address staying in conscious contact. And I think of those two words speak to me so much, conscious contact with ourselves, with others, whatever it is our higher power. Conscious contact with something outside of that small me is how you might want to put it. And so one of the key words here is conscious, which is awake. Again, it's awake. During the course of the week, every once in a while, check in with yourself. Am I really conscious right now? Well, what am I conscious of? There's a lot of stories that keep running on and on and on, ad nauseum up here, at least up here it does. I don't, sometimes I wish I could stop somebody and say, could you change stories with me? I'm tired of my stories. You want to do that later? I'll give you mine, I'll take yours.
I don't know if you want mine.
Yeah. So both Buddhism and the 12 steps begin by addressing suffering. Yes, there is suffering. And they both begin with talking about delusion. You know, we have the word denial, denial, delusion, that keeps us in that suffering place. And then both the work of Bill W. and the Buddha, they end up with a spiritual awakening, with an expanding and an opening that continues through the journey. And it's quite marvelous. The first teaching of the Buddha after his awakening was the Four Noble Truths. And it's really about there's suffering, the cause of suffering, and he did say there's a way out of suffering. And I think all of us who are sitting here have somehow learned about our own suffering and found there was a path out of suffering. God, we're so fortunate. I'm so fortunate. I'm just going to skip some things. Okay. So just as the Buddha taught that the cause of our suffering is desire and attachment, we are attached to getting what we want. And we could say we're attached to getting our drug of choice, and you know, however you want to put it. And the 12th step addresses this with a path for overcoming a particular virulent form of attachment. Attachment to the drug. We call it addiction. But if we broaden the context, there's another attachment that even when we put everything down is sitting there, and it's the one that the Buddha talked about, and that's the attachment to the sense of self. The attachment to I, me, mine. Just watch, if you take a half a day, how often in the course of a half a day, an hour, the me comes up. Well, what about me? What about me? I, me, mine. How many times when you're listening to somebody else, you're listening? Are you still running it by me? By mine? And we get very good at communicating. We don't always say, hey, but wait till I tell you about mine, even though we may want to. I, me, mine, basic addiction. And so on this path, on the Buddhist path, and also on Bill W.'s path, we're starting to let go of the tyranny of the ego. And it is a tyrant because it doesn't let us see everything else that's in life and really enjoy it. It's not easy because this is who we think we are. I'm me. And I love it. It's cute with kids when they're like two or something and they learn to say, mine, mine. And then when they're 40 and the head of a corporation, it's mine. Yeah. So a major force in this whole awakening process, and it's so beautiful the way they do it in the 12 steps, is finally understanding. So a Zen teacher, we understand I'm not who I think I am, but he said, nor am I otherwise. Well, we are both, if we can remember that. So reflection, meditation, action, it's all built into the 12th step. So do we have time? Let's take a very brief look at the 12 steps, all right? Step one, we admit a powerlessness. It's a major key to waking up. And again, we can take it to a deeper level than just substance or a behavior. We really do not have control over so much of what happens in our life. Yes, we can make the to-do list, and yes, we can much of the time do the to-do list. But we're not controlling what the weather's going to be. I always think of the poor people who make a wedding plan for outside with 300 people and it rains, you know? Well, I mean, in life we need plan B, but yeah. The Buddha taught something over 2,500 years ago, that there is a place where we have some control. We can learn to be responsible for our reactions and our responses. That we can learn. If it's raining, we can see what our responses, reactions are. If we're unhappy, we can see. That's where we can put our work. Not in trying to make everything go the way we want it, although that's fine, long as you're okay with it not always happening that way. But our responses and our reactions. And when we do that, we save ourselves from a lot of suffering. A lot of suffering. So step 2 and 3, we surrender, right? We surrender. We realize in terms of whatever our drug thing was that our way was not working. And then, oh my goodness, what then? You know, I didn't know, how am I going to live without drinking? It was really confusing to me. And it's at this place that another awakening happens. We surrender again. There's something bigger than just my way of doing things. And it's quite marvelous when we can do that. We can turn our lives and at least part of us, part of our will, over to something outside of ourselves. Something. It might be turning it to something like a deep inner presence, a deep inner essence. But it's about getting it out from the ego. That's really where it has to be. Doesn't matter where you locate it, up there, down here, and there. But something other than my way or the highway. And then things start to change. There's something much more vast than our conditioned presences. You know, we can call it HP, we can call it Buddha nature, we can call it God, we can call it consciousness. I think we have to be careful not to get overly worked up about a word if we don't relate to the word. Anyway, the word is not God. But we can find something that we go, yeah, this is bigger than me. This can help guide me. Steps 4 and 5, a willingness to see beyond our own clutching desires. I think it takes a lot of courage to start doing steps 4 and 5. And one of the things where we are so lucky in program, so many people wouldn't even think of making a moral inventory. You know, why would they do that? I mean, some people do, but to really sit and look at all that, to explore, and to be able to do it with compassion, that's where the big change comes, to be able to look at ourselves, not from a yuck point of view, but wow, this being human has a lot of foibles built into it. Compassion is like a mirror, and from that place we can see different attitudes, different activities, and we really explore this. And this blends beautifully with the Buddha's teachings, and I'll put it in a very pithy way, is to be kind and do no harm. To be kind and do no harm. Not just to other people, but to ourselves as well. But in order to do that, you have to clearly see your own intentions. And you have to be willing to own your actions. So a lot's going on there. Steps 6 and 7. There's an increasing surrender to truth, an increasing opening to humility. And again, it's like we are not the most important God in this vast universe. And it's really marvelous when we allow people in, when we really see all of this. It's a paradox. On one hand, we're all potentially awake. It's all there. We have the capacity. It's just like there's a cloud, right? And on the other hand, the path to spiritual awakening takes courage. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? It takes courage to see who we really are. because we have a notion of who we are that has nothing to do with who we are. Yeah, not always some nice things, but no, not the basic essence. And the goal of spiritual practices such as meditation and prayer, they help us see what we're not and see a little more into what we are. Steps 8 and 9, come out of seclusion. It's one thing to do the 4 all by yourself, you know, in your room, and you can keep a light, just a small light on so nobody can look into the window and see that you're looking at yourself. And then you trust your sponsor, okay. But now we're taking it on the road big time. Steps 8 and 9, where we're reconnecting into relationships that are real, not just the way we want them in our minds, but taking into account the other person. And it doesn't always go so easily. I mean, I remember once I made I had just gotten sober, but I went to step 12 right away, you know, step 11. And I went to my ex-husband and I said, okay, I have to make an amend. And he said, okay, but I have a client. He was a lawyer. I have a client coming in a few minutes. But it's important. I have to make an amend. I said, I'm really sorry for the way I acted when we were married. I wasn't nice and I stole money from you. And he said, honey, I knew you were taking the money. It's not a big deal. And I said, don't you get it? I'm making an amend. I then decided to wait till I was sober. Yeah, so you have to know. I have to know what you're doing. So we have to make more peace with those outside of ourselves, that making the amend, even though it is for ourselves, it's really not just for ourselves. It involves the other people. We have to know when to make them and when not to make them. And there's such a generosity in letting go. Such a generosity in letting go. And letting the other person, you know, out of the prison that you have them. Oh boy, we sure do put people in prisons a lot. Now the other thing, and this is very much now going into the Buddhist teachings, as we reflect on steps 8 and 9, we really become more and more clear that we are all interdependent. We are not living this life all alone. Not at all. It is said so beautifully, when I harm you, I harm myself. When I am open to you, I am open to myself. And all of this takes mindfulness. And even though, you know, we have the 11th step that talks about compassion and mindfulness and conscious contact, this awake kind of seeing and being is beneficial and is with us from the moment we take the first step. You know, it's not, you know, we don't wake up all of a sudden, but little by little, have you found that? Little by little, you're seeing a little more and you're feeling a little more and you're connecting a little more. So step 10 is telling us we don't just take a course and then drop it. It's a lifelong state of reflection, however you do it. However you do it. Contemplating and owning our own actions. You want to own something? Own your own behavior. Don't own somebody else's thoughts in life. So within the Buddhist teachings, it talks about this a lot. There's a continual reminder to be mindful. Continual reminder to reflect. And upon reflection, take virtuous action. Not harm, not harm. To watch as things unfold. And he gave some wonderful talks on this to his son, Rahula, who was 7 or 8 at the time. By the way, his son became enlightened at age 7. Depends who your parents are sometimes. But he did tell in this one particular thing that's something for all of us. And he said, be mindful in the beginning of something. be mindful when you start something. Is this going to be, is this important? Am I doing it for a good reason? Will it be helpful? He said, and then be mindful in the middle of it. How's it going? Where is it going? Should I stop? Should I continue? And then be mindful in the end. And this is really a wonderful little formula to keep in mind as you start on certain projects with certain people. Be mindful in the beginning, in the middle, and the end. And this is another way of saying it's a gradual awakening that deepens day after day and year after year. Like that sense of sobriety is much more than just not taking a drink or picking up a drug. It's much deeper than that. And step 11, we deepen our sense of awakeness through meditation, even though sometimes while we're meditating, we tend to fall asleep at times. But with meditation, when we're stopping and we're seeing moment by moment, you start to see how it works. And even though people sometimes say, I don't know, I've been meditating, but nothing is happening. And then they'll say, my relationship with my husband is much better, and I'm getting along much better with people at work, you know, things like that. So it's not like all of a sudden we're going to become gods, that we might become more human, that's for sure. And then we come to step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. So these steps are an ongoing process, and step 12 certainly is. I relate to this certainly in terms of program for me. When I put down the alcohol and some other stuff, I quickly saw life in a different way. I remember walking down the street going, huh? It just was different. It was astonishing. So on one hand, there was a sudden awakening. And then little by little, month after month, year by year, decade by decade, things started to coalesce a little more. The trance got pierced. I still get into the trance, I think we all do. But the trance of what I thought my life was got pierced. But being free of alcohol was not enough. It just wasn't enough. There was still this restless giant inside me that, within us all, that wants something. And when we wake up to this restlessness and we're willing to sit with it and be with it, we start to connect with a lot of other people. And then, of course, the grasping doesn't go fully away. Maybe the drug or the activity or the behavior is down. But have you noticed that the need for control can still be around at times? Or most of the time? And for me, what's still sitting here is like that urge to eat compulsively. And I still do it. And, you know, I decided I had to say it from here, to own it, that, you know, I've been sober 39, I don't know, a lot of years, but that doesn't mean that I've got everything going exactly the way it needs to go. So I'm not sitting here the perfect whatever. But that too can be addressed, that too I can be more mindful and hopefully stop before more harm, you know, is done. So the steps and the Buddhist teachings, they help us see, they really help us see clearly. They help us see how entangled we have been or still are with the drama of little stuff. You know, it's just like so important. I said we never noticed that there was something bigger. Yeah. And we start to see that pretty clearly. And little by little we awaken to our true potential. There's so much possibility in here. So much possibility in this room. And I wonder what it would be like if we all were in this room 30 years ago. this would be a different room. This would be, right? So a lot is possible. And the Buddhist teaching also really helps us see that we don't have to stay locked in that drama of the little self. So we're opening, we're awakening to our potential. We're seeing the interconnectedness of everybody and the underlying impermanence. I think that is of paramount importance. So those things are the ultimate achievement, I think, of spiritual practices. So I'd like to read a poem, which I've read here before, but I love it. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth across the doorsill where the two worlds touch. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. So let's just sit for a minute. So I think one of the ways we learn the best is when we're our own teachers. So I would like to suggest we locking the doors and not letting anybody leave. That we get into groups of three. And each person will talk for about 4 minutes, and we'll keep track of it. And just some reflections. Even if you're not near step 12 or haven't done it or don't remember it, it doesn't matter if you heard anything I said tonight. You could just say, in what aspects of my life do I practice some of these principles? Or in what aspects haven't I? Or how could I nurture the practice of mindfulness a little more in my life? Or how could I nurture more kindness in my life? So it's just about taking a look at what's going on in your own life, not about judging anything, but like, is there anything I can take from tonight and put to use? And if the answer is no, then what in your life is really working? Okay, so there's no one right way. So can you just get into groups of three?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.